Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good afternoon, rather. This is 88.9 FM, Neighborhood Public Radio. My name is Effrey, and this program is called Frank Prattle. We have a very special program today. We have two of my favorite people in San Francisco, Randy Pritikin from the Nelson Gallery and Mads Linnerup from himself. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Rennie.
And I'm Mads.
Hello. If just for the general listening public, what have you, if you guys have websites for people to check out while they're listening on the air, if you could just give those, that'd be great.
The website for the Nelson Gallery is nelsongallery.ucdavis.edu. And it's a pretty great website because it was done by Joseph Del Pesco, who is a genius, but also we have our whole collection of 3,700 objects on the website, so you can check it out.
And I got a website, and it's fairly unupdated, which is one of the things that I'm going to do tomorrow. No, I don't know when I
I swear, tomorrow.
I swear, exactly. But you can still see some work there and get an idea of what I do. It's madslinnerup.com, and it's spelled MADSLYNNERUP. And just email me if you want to see newer stuff. You can harass me, that's okay.
Do you take unsolicited emails? Do you answer them ever?
I mean, be honest. But now I'm probably going to get a lot because I know you all are hearing this.
What about yourself, Rennie? Do you?
Yeah, no. I think. Well, of course, we're all. I get about 10 spams for every real email that I get. But one of the things about being a curator who's interested in new work and accessibility is that you have to be willing to visit people's studios who you've never heard of or answer emails or check out websites. It's a lot easier than it was when I started, where you had to physically go places.
Do you guys want to start out maybe a little bit talking about the internet and how that's influenced not only your work but kind of your probably both of your creative visions? Mads?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I think the internet, like you're saying, it's an amazing thing where you can figure out. If you're interested in something really quickly, right. And also just like someone emails you, you're like, who is this person? You want to like just get a face on it? I think that always helped for me. And that's, I mean, just one of the many ways that I've used the internet. And I think regarding, what was I going to say? Shit, I lost my thread of thought here. I'm becoming more and more, wouldn't say, depending, but maybe just like I need this like internet a little more than I thought I would in the beginning. And also it was great when I first got my website because I could really get my work out to people that maybe wasn't in the same town and all that.
So right.
Kind of obvious that would be great. But I think it's like now the one way. And then like this radio station, listening to it online today was awesome. So okay, I got to speak louder. Thank you.
Obviously there are good things about the internet, like everyone and their goddamn uncle can listen to it. But, I mean, do you find that there are bad things as well, that maybe trade-offs that you don't like so much?
I'll tell you the truth. You know, we all know about the bad things, like I mentioned spam and stuff like that, but it's really, the great stuff so incredibly outweighs that. It's amazing. In 1995, I got to go to Japan and give a series of lectures in museums, and I came across this Japanese artist who I thought was incredible, and it turned out he was in Germany. I had only seen his work in Japan, and I wanted to give him his first show in the United States, and I ended up doing it, but I was exchanging phone calls, I guess, at the time, 95, probably phone calls, with this woman who was a curator at the Hirshhorn or the Corcoran Gallery in Washington, and I said, well, since we're both interested in this guy, Kenji Yanobe is his name, why don't we do a little East Coast, West Coast tour? And she said, oh, I could never curate anything that I didn't see in person. And it made me feel like, ooh, I guess I'm really bad. Now she's like the director, I think. But
let's hope she's changed policy a little bit, huh?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's probably proper curatorial etiquette, is you don't curate by looking at images. You have to see stuff in person. And it is true. Well, it used to be a curator's part of the things that you learn is it's really not good to curate by slides because slides can really deceive.
Yeah.
I think internet, you can get a better sense of work, but it probably is generally better to curate by seeing stuff in person. But you also learn to trust your gut, and I knew from looking at this work it was incredible, and it was one of the best projects I ever did. So that's one of the great things that the internet has done, is that it's enabled curators who maybe can't travel to Europe at the drop of a dime to be able to curate European or Asian artists. And then, like, day before yesterday, I was talking to this artist, a great artist in Davis, Terry Burley, and she's teaching a class at CCA in the fall on non-spaces, you know, places that have no personality, no character, nothing in them, like airports and Walmart. And so I was talking to her about artists who do setup, photographers who do setups and then photograph them, you know, like models, and they photograph them in a way to make them seem, in the photographs, absolutely believable as spaces, like Thomas DeMond, you know, his work. And I was trying to think of the first guy that I know who ever did this guy named James Casabir. Do you know that name? And I couldn't think of his name. I just couldn't think of his name. And I was saying, I know he's married to X, but I can't think of his name. And she said, well, just
look on
X's
the internet.
Husband on Google. And I was thinking, I was typing in model photographers, you know, and he said, put in Lorna Simpson's husband, and bang, there it was. Yeah. So, yeah, the research is just amazing.
Awesome. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about what projects you got going on. Mads, what are you working on right now?
Right now, I'm promoting an estate sale, which is happening tomorrow from 9 to 3. I'm leaving town, so I have a lot of stuff to sell. Actually, my girlfriend has most of the stuff for sale, but it's amazing. It's like three couches.
Is it all crap? Are you promoting a crap sale? Or is it going to be good?
Sale. Well, you know, like maybe a little bit, but you know, in between the crap, there's always some really good stuff. I mean, there's a Polaroid transfer machine.
Ooh.
Which is, I know if like I've told people that I have a Polaroid transfer machine, they're like, what? When is it? Well, where is it? And so if you guys are interested in that, should come early. Should come before 9. Yeah, it's the one in the flyer. I have a flyer laying here.
If you come down to 21st in Valencia, we're going to tape that bad boy in the window and you can take a peek see yourself.
And this the address, it's in West Oakland. It's 716 Peralta Street. And it's between, it's on like the corner of 7th Street, which is the big street running underneath the BART train. And it's just like two blocks from the West Oakland BART station. So it's pretty convenient. That's like, I've been taking pictures of old stuff and now I made it like a little website with it, but I don't have the link because it's a little kind of complicated.
One project that I definitely wanted to ask you about that really, really rocked my socks recently was down at the Juanes. You had something. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The umbrella, or it's a piece that's one of those like works that I've been doing lately, where a combined sculpture and video. And I think I have been making sculpture for a long time, and I'm just always fascinated with making sculpture out of kind of low budget stuff. And this video that I had made in connection with the sculpture, it's like me imitating the sound of rain. in like numerous different ways. And so when you walk up, you see this umbrella made out of paper, like an enlarged umbrella, and you hear the sound of rain. And when you walk around the umbrella, you see that it's just a video of me inserting the sound with like different objects, like markers on a, like markers to draw with.
Sharpies, yeah. I think that was when I walked around. It was a bunch of Sharpies.
Yeah,
I was like,
a bunch
what?
Of Sharpies, like in my hand, like just like sort of falling on an empty cardboard box, and it makes this like crazy.
Could you do that again?
this like leads to maybe like a project that I have in mind for the future, which you know will happen soon. But I'm interested in sound. I'm kind of interested in like sound from video work because. You know, this video that's at the Waters right now is playing and you hear it while you're looking at other stuff. And I'm always like, I'm always a little bit bothered myself that you can hear video sound or like, it's exciting and at the same time as kind of annoying when you're looking at something else that doesn't have anything to do with like it affects the environment. And so I've been thinking about making just a whole CD of like sounds from video like that I sort of been interested in the past.
You mean your own or not?
No,
your own?
other people's stuff, and maybe including like a one piece of my own. But it's like when I edit video, you hear this sound over and like you're going through
and
the
like, maddening sound, like
yeah,
and 400 times.
So like. it becomes like this. You know, it becomes a very familiar thing. Even though when I scream, I don't work. I know these different sounds that you might not be like paying attention to if you see them, but like me having it edited and heard it over and over, it becomes like something that's or some weird.
It's such a small thing, but it's huge for a curator. Is that this issue of sound and video in group shows? One of the worst blow-ups I ever had at Yerba Buena. I used to be the chief curator at Yerba Buena. Was this artist from England came over, and it was a one-person show, but he had three or four video installations in the main room at Yerba Buena, and I walked in, and he was in the midst of a complete meltdown, screaming at the curator.
Ooh.
What were you thinking? Obviously, you weren't thinking at all. Just because there was a little bit of bleed, you know, and we had built these rooms and everything. So it's really, it's a problem. I noticed the Wattis has more than any other space in town. I thought about it. They've experimented with all the, you know, Ralph, I guess.
Yeah.
With these
tubes that weird.
And shower curtain kinds of things. And, but it's a real problem. I'm doing a video show in the fall. It's my next show.
This is at the Nelson.
At the Nelson Gallery at UC Davis. And it's for artists who were photographers or started in photography. And so my solution to this dilemma was to pick four videotapes that are almost completely silent or very minimal sound, just because, you know, I don't have a huge budget. I had to figure out the most pragmatic way to deal with it, which was either silent or very quiet video. They're videos by photographers, so they're kind of extending that practice.
Is it a lot of still frame stuff, or?
Well, that's a good question. Let's see. One is the famous Will Rogan video,
yeah.
You know, his classic video. So that just has the sound of rubber bands hitting the wall, stuff like that. One is an older guy named Nick Nicosia, who's a real famous photographer from Houston, Texas. He's famous for his still photography. He has this very famous picture that most people who look at photography will know. It's a color picture of a fireman shopping for pumpkins at a pumpkin patch. And in the background, there's a house on fire.
Wow.
So it's pretty funny and very famous. So he's quite a good photographer. And he got into video in the last 10 years or so. And this video, the one that makes the most noise, or most sound, it's him driving around in a suburb, and the camera's in the looking through the windshield of the car, and it's a very, very clean white suburb, and he's just driving around and these streets, and there's like this kind of corny music playing. But you realize after a few minutes that it's all choreographed. All the people walking by, all the people on the sidewalk are rehearsed.
Are moving in time.
Yeah. And while are, you know, it really looks random the first time, but then you realize, oh my God, this person is crossing the street, or these people are having an argument, and it's all been worked out, choreographed. So it's really beautiful. But there is another guy, Larson, William Larson from Philadelphia, who has his tape is about half an hour, and it's like 6 5-minute sections. And the first one is, for example, a guy sitting in a beautiful house in the living room. In summertime, and the lights coming through the curtain windows, but it looks like a complete photograph, a still photograph, and it goes on, you know, and it's kind of beautiful. But then suddenly, like after 30, 45 seconds, you realize he has a baby in his lap, and the baby starts kicking.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then it cuts and goes into another one. One of them is the artist himself getting out of the bathtub and staring right into the camera, and he's just frozen.
No blinking, nothing?
Every once in a while you see his body a little sway flutter or something. Yeah. And yeah, he does blink. And then you see like water drip off his...
Ooh, tense!
Yeah. So that's the show.
Nice. What's
when does it start?
Yeah.
It starts the last Thursday in September and runs through the fall.
Okay.
Davis is on the quarter system, so I do my shows quarterly.
Okay. This is 88.9 FM, Neighborhood Public Radio. You're listening here in the Mission and elsewhere, wherever the hell you can get it. You can also listen online at conceptualart.org/NPR for Neighborhood Public Radio. I'm on with Rennie Prinnikin and Mads Linnerup. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
All right. Good. I'm not foreign. I don't know. So one question that I wanted to...
I got a beer if you guys... All right.
No. Have a beer. Go for it.
No, okay.
Mads is going to loosen up. although I don't know if you can loosen up much more than Chris Perez and Eleanor Harwood. They got loose. They brought a bottle of champagne when they were off. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they downed it, too.
They downed it.
And then they started talking some trash.
I guess it's one way. Go ahead. You're welcome.
So the question that I was curious to ask you guys about is, I mean, you both come up with amazing fucking ideas. What's your inspiration for them? I mean, Mads, like with your video work, it's some of the most popping out there right now that I've seen personally. And I was talking to somebody else the other night, and I was like, where in the hell do you think he gets his ideas from?
I mean, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I think, I mean, it's always like a very, I gotta hold the beer up in front of the mic here. Oh, sorry, get distracted. And I think it's one of those things now that I'm kind of embarrassed of saying, because I think it's such a common theme in like contemporary art right now, with art that's kind of inspired by everyday, and that everyday, I think I for a while I've been saying this, and I, you know, that as a way of describing my work, but. You know, I want to be, I don't want to just be one of those, like, making art about every day, so, but
yeah, give us the truth,
So, but getting back to that, I guess, it is inspired by every day, so now I'm repeating this thing that I don't want to say too much, but,
when you go to New York, are you going to, like, deny that you ever lived in San Francisco? Is that
Not at all.
Like, you gotta get a tattoo to remember us.
Right. It's one of the funny things. Like, I was thinking about it because I feel like everybody who lived in San Francisco that I know of, like other artists who moved away, there's always like this. I mean, they had some sort of. I can't say I grew up here, but I feel like sometimes I did with my art, and I went.
How long have you been here?
9 years.
So. You grew up. You're only 19 now, right?
Barely. I thought he was 18 and a half.
No, but the art that I've been... I mean, everybody I've been inspired by has more or less been people local here. And I think people... I can mention a bunch of people who moved out in the recent years that I think still represent San Francisco, like Harold Fletcher and Chris and J. Joe and I mean there's like so many other people, like, but all that art.
So why are you leaving?
Tell us.
To go to school. So
why?
To go to school. So
why?
And also,
what? Well, yeah, you've already made it. Why are you going to school?
No, I feel like I can learn a lot more. So definitely help.
Who teaches there that you want to study?
John Kessler is one of the people that I really, I'm really curious to see.
Is he a video guy?
He makes videos. And like I was saying before, I've been trying to incorporate video with sculpture and make video that is not just like a video on a monitor or something. And really work, like just try and push that media a little bit more. It has already been pushed a lot, but I think it gets a little bit sterile. Sometimes this is to look at videos on a monitor, and I'm just trying to make an environment with
what
that.
What happens if they start telling you that, oh, that everyday life and that community-based work, it's so San Francisco, you have to get over that. I mean, are you going to just say, oh, yeah, I'm sorry?
Maybe.
What about yourself, Rennie? Where do you get your ideas?
I don't know. I don't know. I used to say that being a curator is not the same thing as being an artist, but it's a parallel activity to being an artist. Because, you know, I have to read, I have to talk to people, I have to see art, I have to think. And so that's parallel to how an artist, you know, I think particularly reading. So there's that. And being out in the world and being engaged and doing things like this. But also, I had an agenda, especially in each stage of my career. I worked for 15 years at New Langton Arts as a co-director and director. And our agenda there was to promote performance and installation and video, which were new forms then. I'm going back to the late 70s. And then when I went to Yerba Buena, it was to really promote diversity, bringing in all kinds of different people who hadn't had access to the art world. And then about halfway through, I really got excited about bringing in popular culture into the arts. So I did this string of shows, starting with Star Wars, that I brought to Star Wars, worked with Lucas.
By the way, I've heard amazing things about that show.
Because
he's not going to blow his own trumpet here, but I am for just half a second. I heard that there were lines around the block to get into an art show, which is what I do believe unheard of.
Yeah,
completely.
Never happened again. But the funny part of the story is that we did it deliberately to stake out turf. It was the same week that MoMA opened. So they had the international jet set art world there, and we had lines around the block to see Star Wars. So, and nobody came across the street.
Are you serious?
Direction. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's
it was
what
really
you get.
Actually, it was kind of frustrating. But anyway, starting with Star Wars, and then I did a show called Hall of Fame, where I brought 52 different Halls of Fame from around the country to send me displays, with the argument that Halls of Fame were people's museums, you know, the rather than top down, they were bottom up,
right,
kind of
right.
Thing. So, you know, everything from the Strippers Hall of Fame to
ooh, where's that?
That's down in Barstow.
Okay, wow. just write that down, ladies and gentlemen.
It really brought in the diverse, large audiences that we were looking for. So that was great. And then the last show I did at Yerba Buena was this genius Renaissance man magician named Ricky Jay, and I worked with him.
That's I've heard also good things about that. With
yeah,
it
was
different.
Incredible.
They were bills. What you tell it?
Yeah,
I don't know what.
Yeah,
the
well,
hell
Ricky
I'm talking.
Ricky Jay is lives in L.A. and he's the world's. He doesn't like people to say this, but he is the world's greatest sleight of hand artist, meaning card tricks. He can do things with cards that really make your hair stand on end. I was at his house once, and he the two rules with magicians are you can't ask them how they do it, and you can't ask them to perform. So you have to wait for them to volunteer.
You can't ask them for...
Not when you're socializing
right,
with them.
Yeah,
it's just rude.
Do it again.
Yeah, right. So we were talking. I spent the whole day with him, and he almost always had a deck of cards in his hands. But then it was toward the end of the day, and he said, okay, I'll do it. You know, so he had this brand new deck. You know, I saw him unwrap it, and he...
Do you know they were legit?
They were legit. He shuffled the deck about 10 times, and then he dealt out 4 poker hands. And he said, okay, turn them over. And they were all ace through 10 in order.
What?
So, so you don't want to play poker with him. So anyway, but he's...
Or you do if you're on his team.
Yeah, right. He's a great sleight of hand artist, but that's just the beginning. He's a great writer. He's written many things for The New Yorker. On the history of magic, con artists, freak shows, just the underworld. His best friend is David Mamet, the playwright.
Oh, yeah.
So,
genius
and he's,
playwright.
Yeah, and he's been in many, almost all of Mamet's movies and many of his plays. And just really interested in the underworld. So Ricky has published... many magazine articles, about 10 books, and et cetera, et cetera. He's just an amazing guy and really smart. And he kind of lives in the 19th century. I said that he's kind of half Sherlock Holmes, half Moriarty, you know, because he's got this dark side. But he also is a collector, and he has one of the more amazing collections I've ever seen of magic-related paraphernalia going back to Europe in the 16th century, all the way up to the... He doesn't do too much in the 20th century, but through the 19th century. So I did a show. My last show at Yerba Buena was selections from his collection of, you know, Tom Thumb. There really was a Tom Thumb.
The real Tom Thumb.
The real Tom Thumb's, you know, advertising for his shows. These were like, Ricky says, they're like Chinese restaurant menus that get put under your door. And it's just miraculous that some of these have survived for 200-300 years. And the graphics are incredible, and the design is incredible. And there's a book, actually, you can get. Just Google Ricky J, and it's a book from the collection, from the exhibition, that's quite great. So that was a very long way of saying that my idea is, you know, once you say, okay, I'm interested in visual culture,
right,
stuff that is visual but wasn't originally thought of as art, and trying to bring that into the museum, then it just opens up a whole field for you to explore.
Nice. Unfortunately, we're getting fairly close to the end of our program for today, but before you guys go, I definitely want to touch, Mads, on what we've kind of breezed around, the fact that you're leaving town, but if you just kind of want to tell people that, in fact, you are leaving town.
Am I going to tell or no?
Yeah, well, you know. Tell us what the hell Mads has got on the plate. What's your 10-year plan, Mads? Now you're gonna freak out. You're shaking.
My shaking is permanent. I have a chronic shaking.
Oh.
But someone told me I should drink more red wine, and they kind of, I mean, because I thought it was, you know, getting sick or something, and he said just drink more red wine or wine in general.
Does it work?
Calms.
You won't notice.
Yeah. Yeah, you won't notice. I don't know. But I guess so I'm leaving just because I'm going to school. That's basically it. And 2 years. And then from then on, I don't know what I'm going to be doing, but I'll be in New York for 2 years. And
what's your favorite word?
Word?
Yeah.
Man.
Rennie, favorite word?
Oh, I hate that when that guy does that on television. I don't have a favorite word. Sorry.
Okay, well, good. If you guys just want to give your websites again real quick for the lovely listening audience here at Neighborhood Public Radio, that'd be great.
Nelson Gallery, NELSON Gallery. UCDavis.edu.
And my website is madslynneruv.com. Matt Slinerup, and yeah, there was an estate sale. Can I promote it one more time tomorrow?
Estate sale, come and get it.
716 Peralta Street in Oakland, on the corner of 7th Street, and it's near West Oakland BART station. It'll be starting at 9 and go to 3.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys both so much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
this is this has been Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr, and this is Neighborhood Public Radio, 88.9. And stay tuned for Uni and Her Ukulele, a burlesque, well, I should say a performer, perhaps burlesque if you want to call her that, talented nonetheless, and she's going to be playing her ukulele and singing songs for us for the next half hour.